Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, if you're going to hang on here at KKNT 960 in Phoenix, then we're going to talk about car repair. We're going to argue about which tire is the best tire, which oil is the best oil, all that kind of stuff that goes along with a car show, and you're welcome to join us. Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting here to my left. Nate and I have been friends for many years. He has a diesel shop called Strictly Diesel. You've heard me refer to him numerous times. Nate's really good with the Chevy, the Dodge, the Fords, the common cars out there. And Nate has taught me a lot about diesels, and I've talked a lot about his demeanor and his shop and his staff and all that kind of stuff. But I'm happy. And so if you have a diesel question, now's the time.
Yes, it is.
602-508-0960. I don't know whether to buy the Chevy, the Ford, or the Dodge. I have a Chevy, and it's doing this. I was told that. I have a Dodge that needs this, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So if you're – but if you got a car question or a motorhome question, you can do that as well. But right now, Strictly Diesel, Mark, and we're talking diesels, but any kind of call is good. 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing's been in Mesa since 1970. Brian and Thelma, all you have to do is meet them to understand why Mark really likes sending people there, because they're honest, they're dependable, they're very talented with both customers and the ability to control the technicians and the parts pricing and all that other kind of stuff. So if you're in Mesa, the only place I can recommend that you go, the only place I will recommend that you should go is Thompson's Auto Repair. That's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. So are you getting any of the newer trucks in?
Oh, yeah.
Yet for oil changes and stuff like
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah. You
Anything
bet.
You like or you don't like off the top of your head?
You know, when they slice bread for you and back up on their own, it's pretty amazing how far they've come, you know.
You need to explain that.
Wow. The technology and the creature comforts are amazing. You know, it used to be it'd only be in a Cadillac. You'd find the stuff, and now they're in all our three-quarter ton and one-ton trucks.
So you have two keys, husband and wife, and when you put the key in, it sets the mirrors, it sets the seats, it sets the climate controls, everything for you.
Yep.
Automatically. Yeah.
You know, you go into reverse and the whole screen lights up, and you know what's around you just by looking at the screen. You don't have to look at your mirrors anymore.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And if you get too close, it'll go beep, 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 yep. beep. And then it goes faster, yep. faster, or yep. whatever. And then there's – the only thing that's missing is the crash sound from the entertainment system. There's going to be a crash sound if you don't pay attention.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would like – at the time you hit the – I'd like – you know, and it lets you know that you just hit something.
The Chevy's the seat vibrates. That's a little different.
Oh, you're kidding. I didn't even know that.
Chevy, the newer Chevys and GMCs, the seats vibrate.
That's warning you that wake up.
Yeah. Hey, something's up here.
Now, we have to tell people the very first thing you need to do is look at your screen, because it's going to have something there that's telling you.
Or do it the old-fashioned way and look at your mirrors. But
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. First time a seat vibrated, I got out of the truck and had to look at it because I'm like, what's going on here?
Okay.
And then I figured it out. But, yeah, it's crazy, the technology that's in these now.
And especially the cameras that see all the back end, 180 degrees all the way around the car, all the corners, all the back, and then the noises associated with that. I can tell you that on my 2012 Dodge, it goes beep, 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 and it goes like that. But I've hit it before it tells me.
Oh, yeah.
So I've already hit the trailer that I'm hooking up to.
Yep.
And I'm thinking to myself, I would have thought it was going to go into a beep when I'm close enough, but Renee goes, well, you were backing up at 40 miles an hour, so it didn't have a chance. That's what she's going to say.
Yeah. It doesn't know whether to focus on the trailer or the receiver or what, you know, at that point. So it's trying to pick which one's best.
And if it makes a mistake, it's your mistake.
Yeah.
Because you can't blame the camera.
No.
So, oh, and just all the creature comforts is I got in her car the other day and I put her key in it, and the next thing I know, the steering wheel's embedded in my chest and,
yes.
and the seat is up real high.
Yep.
Yep. All that kind of stuff. So it's, whoa, wait just a minute. And you know what? None of those options can be picked or changed until you put it in park.
Right.
So I had already put it in reverse, so I'm sitting there going, oh, this is broken, or the fuse popped or whatever. And then I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, put it in park and then I can adjust the seat.
Yep.
So I don't drive her car very often. You know why?
Why?
It's a Ford.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, I can't be seen in a Ford. As much fun as I've had with Ford all of my life. and this is the second Ford she's bought.
Oh, wow.
And she had a Ford Edge, and this is a Ford Explorer, and she loves them. And she loves the Explorer because it has the fold-down seats and all that kind of fancy
sure.
stuff.
Sure.
But and then we have a couple Fords at the shop, and Andy drives an Explorer. But it's just not something that I'm not going to say to the kids, you have to do this or you have to do that.
Right.
You know, you just buy whatever the heck you want. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. Had any really cars coming in that had a specific noise and you found a skunk in the back seat or anything like that? Anything that got you?
Oh, we get them all the time to get us. Yeah, we're learning constantly. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
We had a windshield washer that the pump was had pressure and but there was nothing coming out of the squirters. But when we blew backwards in the line, it didn't come out at the reservoir or through the pump.
Right.
And ultimately what we found was that somebody had done something near the power brake booster and they had pinched the line. And so we had to go find it.
Right.
Then do you take the booster off and unpinch the line? No. I cut the back, I cut the front, and I put a joint in there, and we're done.
Exactly.
And I'm not going in after that stupid piece of plastic.
Keep it simple. We're seeing a lot of rat damage or mouse damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems to be the time of year for it. So crazy chasing windshield washer hose or wiring or whatever. It's all where did they go and how much did they chew, you know?
Yeah.
So.
There's a couple of ranchers and farmers that I know, and they put chicken wire down, and they parked their truck on top of the chicken wire.
Hmm.
And then they took a 110 cable, and they put the ground to the truck, and they put the hot to the chicken wire.
Yeah.
Now, when that little guy decides to stand up and grab a hold of the cross member on the tranny, he turns to toast.
Right.
And they all laugh and they say, well, nothing can happen because as soon as you short a 110 circuit, it's on a 10 amp, 15 amp breaker, so it's going to pop the breaker.
Right.
He says, but it's pretty amusing to walk out there and find this little fried guy underneath. And I'm thinking, you can't do that with kids or the paperwork. Or the paper boy. You have to be careful with doing stuff like that.
Right.
It's not a great idea. There are traps available that you can put underneath your car and stuff like that.
Sure.
But you don't have to create a death zone.
Someone told me, now granted, depending where you live, this may or may not be viable, but they're like, just leave the hood open.
I wonder why.
Well.
Because of heat?
Well, it lets the heat up, but then it's open to air, and they can't hide in there. You know.
Oh.
It's still dangerous if they're uncovered.
And so you get in the morning, and the battery's dead because the hood light's been on.
Yeah, the hood light's been on all night. Yeah, yeah, you got to unplug the hood light. But.
That's the problem. The technology is so far advanced, and even with that, there's ways that we can go in and manipulate the technology.
Yes.
We can do all kinds of stuff to make things happen because we understand everything is just voltage. That's all it is, voltage. If the door is closed, then the number is 5, and if the door is open, the number is 1. And so we can go in and manipulate that kind of stuff and cause that to happen. And I remember somebody told me that they were hired to put a switch on the passenger side of the car where the wife wanted to be able to disable cruise control from her side.
Oh, wow.
And that's not really hard. All you got to do is break that circuit.
Right.
So we put it in, and you would think that up would be on and down would be off.
Right.
So that's the way we wired it. If she wants to, if the cruise control, she wants the cruise control to work, leave it up. And if you want it not to work, leave it off. So she sits there and she flips it, and of course it cancels the cruise control. Well, after she does that for 5 times and he doesn't see her do that, then he starts cussing the cruise control. And then I hear this story and I'm thinking, well, it's going to come back.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have to fix the problem.
Right.
So what do you do?
The communication with the wife and the husband there?
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Exactly.
This is what happened?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was thinking in front of the wife, perhaps it's the switch we installed for you to cancel the cruise control. Did you leave that in the off position? You know, you have to figure it out somehow.
Exactly.
But that's just one of many examples of, I know people have done that.
Right.
Done different stuff. There's some people that they don't have the ability to disable the rear windows in the car for the kids, so they want to disable it. So put a toggle switch somewhere in the dash. You know what we use a lot? Is old dimmer switches.
Oh, yeah.
The floor-mounted dimmer switches.
Yeah.
and just wire the circuit to there. You push it once, and the windows don't work in the back. You push it again, and then the windows work.
Good idea.
That kind of stuff. So anyway, 602-508-0960. Anything new in your parts purchases or your oils, guys? Anything new? Any price increases and stuff like that?
Price increases like everybody else.
Big time.
Seems like supply is better. Not so much the problems there that it used to be. But price increases for sure. Yes.
And the supply, in my opinion, is terribly overrated because example after example of someone saying no one can find this part, and as long as you find some derivative of the part number, you can find the part.
Right.
And you can cross it over or whatever. And so we're getting a lot of but I think in my opinion, in my humble opinion, in my opinion, I think people are using that for a variety of different reasons. Maybe they don't want the job. And maybe they don't want the customer, or maybe they just don't want to do the work, or maybe this job, like a heater core in a BMW, that pays 11 hours, they just don't want it.
Right.
So they say the heater core is not available. But virtually every car, we don't buy a lot of dealer stuff, but we're just not having any problems finding parts.
Yeah.
That part's made in 20 different boxes, and all we have to do is cross over the parts, number, and find it. So, and again, we're using Rock Auto to some extent because they have the conversion to where you can look at that part and get 10 part numbers. Then you can Google it. And in Rock Auto, it tells you how many of those part numbers we have in stock. So, and then it's going to be shipped to us, and within 24 hours, we have the part.
Right.
So, and we're seeing lots of people saying it's not available. I think it might be, I don't know, you can chime in. I think it might be that maybe shops are using that to explain why the cars aren't going in and out as fast as they used to, because we're all swamped. And we give people, I should only take me 24 hours to get your car done, but in reality, the car's not going to get done in 24 hours.
Right.
And so then the excuse is, I'm having trouble getting parts. But in reality, it's a scheduling problem, and it's because Mrs. Jones came in, and she's the best friend of your wife, and we need to put her in front of your car. So those kinds of things.
Those kinds of things, sure.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, the lines are wide open. We have five. And if you'd like to talk to Mark and Nate, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's a lot of good shops in town, and Action Auto Repair is one of them at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom has been there since 1983, and I've known him since 1983. He has good technicians. Many of them are masters. And masters means that there's 8 automotive tests, and so you can be ASE certified in front ends or ASE certified in transmissions. But when you're a master, you've passed all 8 automotive and light truck tests. So when you have a master technician or you have a bunch of master technicians, that's the highest level of certification. But Action Auto's I-17 in Deer Valley, a good guy at a good place. And who is calling, Gil?
Hey, good morning to John.
John, good morning. How can we help you?
Yeah, I have a question on car batteries. I bought a brand new Honda Accord, 2018 Honda Accord.
Okay.
And I've had the battery die twice since I only got 45,000 miles on it. So I went back and looked at the first battery, went 22 months, and gave me 32,000 miles. And the second battery went 34 months and gave me 13,000 miles. Both times, interesting, it died. It ran fine one day, and the next morning in the garage, and it won't start. You get no clicking, anything, and you get a Christmas tree on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
So then I come over and have it towed. The first one had to be towed because it wouldn't start. The second time, they were able to jump it and get it running, so then I ran it over to the dealer and had the battery replaced. So, what's the average lifetime of a battery?
That's what it really boils down to, is what's the average life of a battery? And you go first.
Is there any way I can test the battery before it goes be proactive and test it?
All right, well, we're going to do two questions, but first of all, What's the average life of a battery?
In Phoenix, you're looking 2 years to 4 years if you're lucky.
I agree 100%. Yeah. We're typically not going to get you under 2 years, and we're not going to have anybody come in that's over 4 years. But I'll answer your question in a different way, too. The battery's life has everything to do with you. Everything. And somebody who uses all their accessories, somebody who uses it for short trips, somebody who doesn't ever go through a real long heat cycle, otherwise let's get it up to operating temperature, let's drive to Flagstaff, let's do that kind of stuff. So every time that you pull a little bit of juice out of the battery, the alternator has to put the juice back in. And there's that window is kind of wide, and so there's times that your battery fully charged is 13 volts, and so you drive it and you park it at 12. The alternator's not going to go crazy at 12. At 12.4, I was going to say. At 12.4, it's not going to go crazy. A battery is also affected by vibration and weight. There is a difference between the weight of a battery and its ability to do its job. The heavier batteries are built better, but they're also a lot more expensive. And so, but I don't really find, I'm not real worried that you've got 22 months, in 32,000 miles. You're not driving the wheels off this car, and it's, it could be short trips or it could be long trips, but the long trips are better than the short trips because we're constantly having to top off the battery.
Right. Does, John, I'm assuming the car sits a lot.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. That right there, especially during the summer months, is going to be hard on a battery.
And one of the things that you could do, but this is no guarantee, you could go down to AutoZone or something like that and buy a battery tender, and you could plug it into the wall, and you could pop the hood. Now, here's the deal. You have to shut the hood after you're done because the hood light will stay on, and it'll counteract the electricity you're putting in the battery.
Sure.
Now, let me ask you a question. On the two that died, when John got in the car and hit the key, exactly what happened?
I didn't hear a solenoid click or anything. All I noticed is the dash. I say Christmas tree. It randomly went to different things possible on and off.
Okay. All right.
It wouldn't start.
Your car falls in.
I called it. Pardon me?
I say your car falls in the year range, too, where there's so many modules that are active at any given time. I mean, if you unlock the door and open and close the door, there's a module that's alive in that thing for probably 2 minutes afterwards. So that right there drains the battery and has a load on it that, you know, unless you're driving it, it can't recover from it. So
And the alternator is going to put back electricity, but if you got your headlights on high and you got your air conditioning blowing on high and you got the stereo system on and your wife's plugged into the cigarette lighter with her laptop and all that kind of stuff, there's never going to be a time where you use more than the alternator can provide, but it's going to get close. It's going to get close. And especially on the short drive, because the duration of the time that the alternator is capable of replenishing the battery is very significant. So if it's a 10 minute to the grocery store and back, the alternator really hasn't had the opportunity to put back the electricity it took to start your car to go to the store and start your car and go back home. So those are all the moving parts. I think you just keep doing what you're doing. You can try different batteries. I'm not a real fan of the idea that the dealer batteries are the best in the whole wide world, because I don't believe that. And Nate's shaking his head. He doesn't either.
No. A good Motorcraft makes a good battery. Sorry, go ahead, John.
I just been going to the Honda dealer.
Yeah.
Take it back and get it serviced.
Are they prorating it? So if it's a 4-year battery and you only got a year on it, are they prorating it so you're just paying 25%?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, I believe so. I'm just trying to get away from the having it die. I'm not concerned if I'm at home and it dies. But now I got to thinking, well, what if I go to my destination and it dies there? It's more of an inconvenience.
I'm also concerned the fact that it made a rattling noise and it didn't crank over, and when you hit the key, it went click, click, or something like that. That means the battery is in full collapse, because we need 9.6 is the number. So we need 9.6 or bigger than that just to have it crank over, at least crank over. and stuff like that.
2 minutes.
And so when you have nothing like that and you hit the key and nothing happens and the Christmas tree goes on and off and lights go on and off, that means that battery's in distress. And so I don't know why, but I think I'd change the brand. I think you'll save some money if you change the brand too.
Yeah, don't be afraid to try something different than a Honda battery. That's yeah.
Yeah, and because Honda doesn't make batteries. They're one of four big battery makers. They make everybody's battery and just slap a tag on them. So you're not.
Oh sure.
So if
you what do you think about go to AutoZone and get one of these battery testers?
Tenders?
And test it like every week?
No, you can get a digital voltometer, and I'll tell you right now. A fully charged battery is 13 volts, okay? 13 volts. You need at least 12 volts, 11.5 volts to crank the starter, 9.5 really, but I'm going to tell him 10, okay?
10 for sure. Yeah.
And so the battery's operational is between 12 and 13.5, almost 14 volts.
Yep.
Because if you check it when it's running, then the alternator can be putting 14 volts in the battery. So and the starter's not going to work above below 9.6. So your window... I'm going to give you your window is 10 to 13. 10 to 13. So if you want to check your battery, then that'll give you the idea. But I think it's more you and your driving habits. I would suggest strongly that you just get a battery tender, open up the hood, connect the cables, shut the hood, and I think that will solve your problem because we're going to top off the battery because you're not driving long enough and far enough to replenish it. Thank you, John. I got to run 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, now's the time because the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here. My name's Mark Salem. Both of us have been around the block. We both have gray hair, and we both have fingernails with a little bit of dirt in them. Well, 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here with Nate from Strictly Diesel, and certainly you can join us if you'd like. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Phoenix area since 1968. The transmissions they worked on in 1968 are quite different than the electronic son of a guns that we've got today. Back then, they had three speeds, and they shifted it with throttle pedal pressure and engine vacuum. Today, we have eight speeds, and the computer handles everything. But they still operate the same. They just make it happen with vacuum or fluid pressure or temperature or a command from the computer. Basically, the transmission hasn't changed. It's just the electronics that go with it. So automatic transmission exchange can provide and products and exceed OEM specifications, and every transmission is thoroughly checked on their state-of-the-art dynamometer before it's installed. So they make sure it's going to shift before they put it in the car. So if you live anywhere near 40th Street in Washington, and as a matter of fact, it applies for the entire Phoenix area as far as I'm concerned, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. We get back to get back real quick. Okay, I got a caller. I'll do the caller first.
Yeah, let's do that.
Who's that?
Say hello to Paul.
Paul, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I have a kind of an unusual problem. I bought a 2021 Malibu, and it was in an accident, a small accident, and the seller told me that the GM wouldn't do the airbag. The airbag was deployed. So when I took it to the dealer, I had a big argument with them, and they basically did not want to cover anything. So I complained to the attorney general, and they started to relax their problems that they have with me. So, but they still won't do cover anything. Anyway, I had the
Paul, stop for a minute. Paul, stop, Paul. We need to know. It's time for us to ask questions. Were you in an? Was this car in an accident when the airbag deployed, or is this an airbag deployment that has no accident attached to it?
No, there was an accident and deployed.
Well, why is
before
why?
Before I bought it,
I understand that, and you bought it with the airbag deployed. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And I drove it. It was fine. There was no problem.
Okay, and what, did you leave the bag sitting on the steering wheel? Or did you
That's what I don't understand. I don't know why or who or anything. But if the airbag was deployed, wouldn't they have had... Anyway, they don't want to cover it. They sent me to a dealer.
Paul, you've said this. We need to ask questions. Why? What's the problem right now? Is the airbag in the steering wheel?
They won't tell me. The dealer will not tell me.
Is there an airbag light on currently? Is there something telling you there's a problem?
Yeah, the airbag light was always on, but now there's about six other lights on, and the dealer...
Okay, we're not going to... You keep going in different directions, Paul. We can't... You just can't do that. You bought a car that was wrecked and evidently fixed by some... put back together in some fashion by somebody else. You're stuck with that car. And the dealer's not going to give you... You didn't buy the car from them. They don't have any allegiance to you. This somebody else had a wreck, and somebody else tried to put this thing back together, and you got problems. These problems are yours. They're not the dealers. I don't stick up for dealers very often, but this is one of those based on what's coming out of your mouth. This is your problem. You're going to have to pay somebody to go in and put this thing back together. They're going to have to figure out if there's an airbag or if it's a used airbag. I hope not. Or if it's or one out of a wrecked car, I should say,
right.
Or a new one. And then there is a process to put in a new airbag and reset everything so you don't have any lights. But if you've got a check engine light and you've got a whole bunch of codes, you're in big trouble. You're just in big trouble. All of this is yours. The dealer has no responsibility, and the shop that changed the oil doesn't have any responsibility. This is yours. You bought a car that had been damaged and had not been put back together right, and that's your responsibility. The only thing you might want to do is talk to your insurance company to see if they'll participate in the repair of your car. Probably not, because they didn't insure the car when it was wrecked. Somebody else had that problem. But, Paul, there's just not much we can help you with. We can't explain the dealer's position. We can only guess, and I've done my best job in guessing. Good luck, Paul. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we start talking about parts and stuff, let's talk about batteries real quick. The experts in batteries tell me that the heavier battery is worth more money because it has more lead. And it has more dividers and stuff like that. But I can't imagine anybody going into Costco with their kitchen scale or their weight scale and weighing the batteries. But you could.
You could.
You can get on the internet and you can look at batteries, and there's going to be a weight associated with the battery. The heavier battery is going to cost more, and it's going to be a slightly better battery.
Usually the cold cranking amps are bigger on a heavier battery.
Physically heavier.
Yes.
Okay. Now, a normal battery should have 12 volts in it at the very minimum. It's 13 volt, it's fully charged. Okay? So there's, and these numbers are going to glaze people's eyes over. So when the alternator's running, we're going to be at 13.5 or so. And so, but when the engine is cranking, we might be down to 12.5 or 12, or maybe even 11.75.
Yes.
So the battery itself has a sweet spot right in the middle on the voltage, and I think you'll agree with me that sweet spot's somewhere around 13 volts. Fully charged battery is going to be 13 volts.
I agree.
So we're going to use it, it's going to go above it when the alternator fires up, and go below when the starter starts sucking all the juice out of the battery.
Right.
But that window is where it always operates, and there's nothing we can do to change that. So if you crank it over in the morning, it makes a difference whether the temperature is 20 degrees or whether the temperature is 60 degrees, because the starter is going to use a lot more electricity at 20 degrees in the morning cold as opposed to 60 degrees when it's warm.
Right.
And the alternator will almost always pop the voltage at the battery. If you're going to check the voltage of the battery, if the battery has 12.8 and you start the car, typically there'll be 1 volt more than that when you bring the idle up after you start the car. So it'll go from 12.8 to 13.8. We know all of us gray-haired guys know all these numbers. And we know that 9.6 is the floor. We know north of 14, somebody's in trouble. The alternators, the grounds are missing. So I had a guy not too long ago. He replaced everything electrical. And he says, I want you to look at it. And I said, well, I'm not going to personally look at it, but I'll have the shop look at it, take it in. And they found the, somebody had taken, done a bunch of battery cables. Now from the negative cable, we go to the engine, right. We go to the frame, right. We go to the fender.
Right.
There was only an engine one.
Uh-huh.
And so he had all kinds of weird problems, and he's replacing batteries and alternators and regulators and modules. And really and truly, a number 10 wire with two eyes on it fixed his car.
Right.
But the cost to find the fact that we're missing that ground probably cost him $150, $175.
Right.
So it's just the way it is.
One of the first things I tell my guys all the time, how are our power and grounds? What does it look like? Is it corroded? Is it melted? Is it, you know?
And I know we're going to take a break real quick, but let me just kind of describe this. We're going to put the positive lead on the positive battery. Okay? And we're going to take our negative lead, and we're going to touch all the places, and the voltage better be the same in every single place we touch.
Yes.
So we got our ice pick in the positive cable, and we touch the radiator, the core support, the firewall, the door, the engine, the power steering pump, and the water pump. And every single one of those better be the same voltage reading.
Exactly.
And if they're not, then we're missing a ground.
Exactly.
Now you got to find it or make it. Yes?
Make it. Yep. Yep.
And we're not going to chase it down. No. We're going to just make a new one.
Exactly.
We're going to take our grinder and grind this piece. We're going to build a new jumper wire. We're going to screw it in there. We're going to spray it with some rubberized undercoating, and we're done.
A lot of the older trucks, you'd be amazed how much is fixed by adding a ground cable somewhere.
And you're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Okay, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. I had moved the matrix to the left.
You touched it, yeah.
And I accidentally unplugged the audio that tapes the show. So I'm in panic mode, but it's there.
It's there.
And it's Gil's fault no matter what anyway. Okay. Auto Dynamics in Sun City is the largest and most trusted source for automotive services. I've known Chuck since the 60s. He opened up his shop there in 1982. And he's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, and he's a good guy. And when people say, hey, I live in Sun City, who should I go to? My answer is always the same, Automotive Dynamics. Jay, I got three callers. We're going to do them real quick. Jay, how can I help you today?
Yes, sir. First of all, big fan, been listening to you for 20 years. Favorite weekend show.
Thank you.
I just got a new pickup, a 2021 Chevy Silverado, and I'm barely smart enough to know how to operate it all the features.
Mm-hmm.
But it has this feature on it that I'm sure you're familiar with. When you stop, when you're in drive in traffic, the engine turns off to save fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And my question is, does that feature affect the longevity of an engine over time? Because I have the capability to turn it off. I was just curious of your thoughts on that.
So I'm still waiting to see that exact question because I have the same thoughts. My F-150 has the same system on it where it shuts off and starts. And, yes, I can shut it off and not have to worry about it. My comment to this, because obviously when it starts, you're on the go and moving right away. I know the oil pumps have come a long way, but I usually take 3 seconds, maybe four, with a slight pause once it starts again before I proceed to accelerate. Just to make sure the oil's lubricating everything. Because sometimes you're sitting at a light, you could be there for 2-3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like starting your motor all over again. So, yeah. And depending on the load, do you have your AC going or not, it'll sit there and not run. So,
and how late are you to your appointment?
Exactly. How late? So I'm waiting on that same question to be answered. I'm kind of testing our F-150 as my own little insignificant test, but
okay.
Yeah,
I have an answer.
You have an answer?
Yeah,
okay.
I have an answer. First of all, I don't like the idea at all, at all. And second of all, the starter that they put in those things is not the same starter that they put in a regular gas motor from the year before.
No,
it's a much bigger, heavier starter. There's no, it's a fuel economy thing,
and
they did that. That's all it is. And so, if you want to do the very best, and to answer your question, it has no effect on the engine because that's what he said. It has an effect on the starter, but not on the engine.
Starter and battery, yeah,
yes,
for sure.
Starter and battery. Sure. So my thing would be is when you pull up to an intersection, throw it into neutral, take the load off the engine, let it idle. The amount of fuel it's going to use while you go through a red light is akin to maybe 1 or 2 tablespoons of gasoline in that period of time. And I don't like the idea that we have to change our habits and all of a sudden we're going to have this delay when the light turns green, because there is this delay until we fire the motor up. I don't like that at all. So,
I'll play with the brake pedal. I'll creep at a light. I'll steering wheel. I'll move it. You know, just whatever I can do to keep the motor running. You know, granted, it's only a push of a button. So why it's so hard to push a button, I you know, can't answer that. But, you know, there's ways around it for sure.
I think if I were you, and let me ask you this. Are you trading your truck every 2 or 3 years, or are you one of those 100,000, 200,000-mile guys?
No, my last truck was a 2009 Chevy. It was totaled in a rear end 3 weeks ago. And it had 375,000 miles on it.
Well, if you wouldn't have let your wife drive it, we wouldn't even be in this mess, would we? I'm teasing you. Don't tell her I said that. Really and truly, it's the dollars and cents don't make sense to me. That what we're saving, we're creating a problem here. That all of a sudden there's a heck of an accident in front of you, and your tendency is to turn the steering wheel right and hit the throttle, because the car's coming at you. Well, you can't do that if you're sitting there at the intersection with a dead motor.
Right.
And so I don't like it. It's a fuel economy thing. That's all it is. There's nothing else there. I mean, so you pick and now can you take the default off of your Ford?
We could shut it off, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's companies out there now that are making modules that you can plug in to just leave it off, period.
Period.
So, yeah.
You can just get on the internet and just punch in your car and just say, I don't want the auto start at the traffic light, and there'll be plenty of people that will help you.
Yeah.
Take perfect. I have the button, so I'm going to hit the button and not have that feature on anymore.
Yeah, I would do that. Thank you, Jay. Thank you very much. Ryan, you're up next. Ryan, how can we help you?
Good morning. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2020 GMC Sierra HD 2500.
Nice truck.
Bought new in December 2019.
Okay.
And I've got 127,000 miles on it already. I'm a contractor, do lots of driving.
Okay.
The problem I'm wondering if there's a fix for is the factory brakes seem to constantly make noise. And the dealership has basically kind of thrown it is what it is. GM doesn't have an answer for it. Had them recently replaced again, and same thing, factory brakes. Is there an aftermarket that has solved this problem?
Well, let me tell you what the problem is, and I'm quite sure that what I'm going to tell you is different than what you've been told. The brakes are squealing because they're moving in their bracket. They squeak and they vibrate. When you put them into the caliper, you're supposed to pin them. They have ears that go over the caliper. And those of us that are smart put a piece of wood underneath the caliper and hold the pad up, and then we take a center punch or a punch, and we just stake the ears on the caliper. Another thing is do you ever use your parking brake?
It probably goes on every 3 weeks or so.
Okay.
Just because I'm parked on a hill, it's an automatic, you know, it just engages. Often, the truck's out of level.
Oftentimes, if you have four-wheel disc, that's the only way we adjust the rear brakes. Will adjust, but that's the better way to do it. Sometimes you just get in there, hold the lever, and push your foot down 20 times. Is it front or back that's squeaking?
It's the front.
Okay. You know, this on a 1 to 10 scale for us is nothing. We understand that you're stopping and starting and doing all that other kind of stuff, but the noise is because the pad is vibrating and it's moving, and the back of the pad is metal and the front of the piston cup is metal, and the two of them get together. They make pads that go on the back of the pads. You can stake the pad and tighten it up. And on a tire rotation, it's no big deal to put a little pry bar underneath the bottom of the front pad and then take a hammer and hit the two doggone ears to reattach it to the caliper. So, you got anything?
Aftermarkets do have other options, so there are options out there. I know some of the pads come with a gel that goes on the back side of the pad to help with noise.
Because that's where the noise is at, the back of the pad and the fingers on the caliper. That's where the noise is coming from. Boogers, we call it. If you want to smear boogers all over there, that'll work sometimes, too.
Yeah. And believe it or not, I've told people, take a garden hose to the brakes when it's cold and let rust build up a little bit and see if that helps the noise at all. A lot of the brake dust, if you're starting and stopping and the truck's loaded, you get so much brake dust in those wheels that's what contributes to the noise too. So maybe just a garden hose on the weekend to the caliper and the rotor and see what that does for you during the week.
And a lot of times we'll do it. Somebody who has this problem on an oil change will pop the front tires off of it because the noise is typically the front.
Yep.
And we'll take our circular sanders and we'll just rotate the rotors 360 degrees and put a non-directional finish on the front and the back of the rotor. And we do that part of an oil change.
So that's a great question. Has the dealer replaced the rotors when they do the pads?
So not to catch you off guard at all, your shop was the last one. And honestly, the service at Strictly Diesel was great. So,
oh, thank you.
Uncalled for plug for you guys. Jonathan was my service guy over there.
Awesome, thank you.
And the rotors were so warped from that heavy storm we had in Scottsdale not long ago, where we ended up driving through puddles. We did new rotors, new pads. Can I just rework the whole front end, get an alignment, everything else?
Okay.
And you know, just within a week, we're back to the same noise that the factory told me. You're out of luck, man. GM says it is what it is.
Get it back to us.
I mean, this is
if you can be without the truck, get it back to us. I want to see it, and let's see if we can figure something out for you.
Yeah, you know, the pads you talk about, we buy those by the basketful and just put a pad on the back of the pad because it's the metal part of the pad, and the metal part of the caliper piston is the noise. So we just put a blanket in there and try to keep it quiet. But now we also bevel it. Most pads are now beveled on the leading edge of the pad.
Yes.
But sometimes we'll put a little bit more of a bevel on there, so that it doesn't rock back and forth. So there's things that we can do, but it's all your fault anyway. Ryan, it's all your fault because you're a contractor, and no. We always blame it on the contractor.
No, it's not the contractor.
Yeah, I'm teasing you.
I know.
All righty, Ryan, thank you very much, buddy. Thank you very much. Steve, you're up next. How can we help you?
Thanks for taking my call. My wife has a 2015 Genesis sedan, a good car. About 2 weeks ago, I was driving it with her, and I noticed I came up the stoplight, and the oil pressure light came on just at the stoplight. As soon as I accelerated away, it went off. So I quickly checked the oil. Oil was fine. And we've been driving it because when we were out of time, we didn't have much of a choice. And I assume it's the oil pressure sensor, because obviously if the oil pump was gone out, the engine would have seized by now. But the sensor is located way down, and you have to remove the upper intake, the lower intake. About a $1,000 job.
Wow.
At a dealership or any place else that I've checked with to get to it and replace it. Most recently, and I haven't driven it, but she said the light has not been coming on.
1 minute.
I think it's just, you know, when it's idling in gear, which is the only time it would do it, you take it out of gear, speed it up a couple hundred RPMs, the light would go off. But if that's worth spending the money on doing that.
No, you've just jumped from 1 to 10. I mean, you've just talked about the oil pressure light coming on intermittently, but you didn't say anything about the engine was clattering. You didn't say anything about smoke coming out from underneath the hood. You didn't say anything about all the other symptoms, engine knocking. You didn't give us anything else, but we just got the light. And then all of a sudden, we're in a $1,000 repair to replace the oil pressure switch. There's just a whole lot in between all of that. It would be critical to know where the oil level was at when the light came on, you know, pull off the side of the road, pull the stick and look at it and get a good reading on it, because we don't want it below the ad mark. A lot of cars will consume a lot of oil out of the pan, and then when you shut them off, as the oil in the valve covers and in the upper part of the engine falls down, then it comes to the full mark. But you didn't say anything about a clatter. All you said was the light came on, and I'm not real sure that I'd spend $1,000 going in on the top of the intake. So we're going to stay right there, and we'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's sitting next to me. And I've got some business to take care of, but I want to talk about Blackwell Automotive at 40th Street and Greenway. Last week, we had a couple of callers about Tom and Blackwell Automotive. Tom's kind of an ornery old cuss. He's not old, but he's a ornery cuss. And he does what we call street cars and mom's and dad's cars, but then he also does high-performance cars, and his real forte is vintage cars.
Yeah.
And he's doing fancy blowers on big block Chevys and Fords and four-wheel disc brakes and all that kind of adaptation to take your 65 Mustang into a fire-breathing monster, if that's what you decide to do.
Right.
He's really good at what he does, and I tease him a lot, and if you're a customer of his or if you talk to him, he told me the other day that he was counting washers for inventory. And I said, are you really? And he goes, yeah, I am. You're counting washers? You don't have anything else better to do.
Yeah, there's got to be something better. Yeah.
Isn't that called shop supplies?
Exactly.
Don't you have those underneath there?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to find out how many washers we're selling. And I said, so what, are you going to put a nickel a piece on the washers? I don't know. It'll just depend on, you know, and he goes on and on. I don't know if he's lying to me or not, but I'm going to tell on him on the radio in case he is.
Yeah, yeah.
But bottom line is I'm not counting washers. You know what I mean? That's right. Called shop supplies, and that's covered under the shop supply tax we give them.
Sure.
So, all right, we both have comments on Steve. You got anything?
Steve, what I would do personally is probably contact the dealer, see if there's any TSBs related to this oil pressure switch, if there's any concerns with the oil side of the motor. That being said, if they say no, how many engines have you done because of an oil issue? And see if you can get that question answered.
Because it's going to be zero.
It's probably going to be zero, yeah. Yeah, so to spend $1,000 on the switch, I know even on my side of things with the diesel stuff, we see oil pressure switches all the time, which you think they'd have down pat right now, but they don't. So, yeah, it's very possible it's just that switch, but I get the bill for $1,000. It's not necessarily necessary.
And the oil pressure switch is just a pressure device that turns on the lights, and so it has a contact inside of it, and a little piece of carbon can throw it into kind of weird stuff. And you can replace the switch on most cars and trucks pretty simple with an easy labor operation, but not this $1,000 take the top of the motor off.
Right.
I think an oil change is appropriate. Let's make sure we're probably, I bet that Jennison uses a 020 synthetic. Let's make sure we're put a 020 synthetic in there. Let's make sure it's right at the full mark when we're done doing the oil change, exactly at the full mark. Let's make sure we check it. And then if the oil light comes on, if the light's on, but there's no engine clatter that follows that, then there's probably no problem. That would suggest that the oil pressure switch, which is the tattletale of pressure, is defective. He can probably go into Google and do technical service bulletins for his 15 Genesis.
Probably could, yeah.
And he can probably find those on the internet.
Yeah.
But one of the things, and this has nothing to do with Steve, but on a different subject, my eyes glass over when somebody comes up to me and says, according to the internet, and they don't even tell me the problem, they all of a sudden they want me to approve the repair.
Right.
And I said something to a friend of mine the other day. He called me about his car. And I said, if you start this conversation off with Google said or I saw on the internet, I'm not listening to you. Just give me the symptoms. That's all I want to do, and I want to ask questions.
Right.
And he goes, gosh, you woke up on the wrong side of the bed. And I said, you know, you just caught me in a bad mood, because we hear that all the time.
We do.
And they expect us to fix their cars because Google said something
right
on the internet. And you don't even know who this person is that wrote this on the internet. He could be a convict in Sing Sing, for all you know,
right,
and has never worked on an engine before. So now we're going to start fixing your car. I'm an ASE Master Tech. I'm in front of you. The shop's been in the business since 1979, and you want me to fix your car based on somebody on the internet?
Right.
So when you say, I went to Google, my eyes glaze over, and I just can hardly contain myself. And Renee gets so mad at me, she just grabs me and pulls me away. She says, I know the Google, the thing was coming. So anyway, Harry, good morning, Harry. How the heck are you?
Fine, how are you? I promise not to say anything about Google or YouTube.
Harry, if you do, I am going to hang up on you because I know you.
I know
you. I like
I
you.
Hey, I heard you talking about the stop-start deal, and I too have a 150 Ford pickup. And it has that, obviously. And when I first got it, it did have an issue with that, and I took it back into the dealer, and they said, oh, yeah, well, we replaced your battery. It was a little low on voltage or something, and, you know, that affects the computer. And, you know, and it worked for a while, and then it quit again. Here's the crazy thing. When I'm up in Flagstaff, down here it doesn't.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah, that's what I said. Wow, what? Okay. What's going on with it?
Well, the stop-start is all electrical, so it doesn't have anything to do with ambient temperature. It doesn't have anything to do with altitude. It doesn't have anything to do with moisture. It doesn't have anything to do with humidity. It has nothing to do with any of that. So the only thing I could come to the conclusion on is that would suggest it's a connection problem, some kind of an electrical connection problem that is affected by the change in altitude, the change in temperature, the change in moisture, the change in humidity. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I've had art.
Well, I probably something simple, but finding it's going to be. And I, it's not that big a deal with me.
Yeah.
I'll switch, I can turn it off.
And I'm telling people, too, that and I do this with my tongue in my cheek, but I say I can fix it, but it's, I'm going to bid you $5,000. Because I'm going to replace everything that's a touch, that's associated with this, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to get it or find it or fix it during that period of problem. The other choice is let's just wait till it gets worse and easier to find.
Right.
And let's wait till it fails and it's easier to find. Because if it comes in on a tow truck and it don't start, it's a piece of cake to figure out what's wrong with that.
Right.
So, Harry, have you quit drinking?
Occasionally.
Okay. I'm jabbing him just because he gets me so often.
Yeah.
I don't even know if Harry drinks. I know he's a great guy. I just thought I'd throw that in just to kind of tickle him a little bit. You know what I mean? Harry, thanks for calling.
Renee's not.
No, Renee, Renee's here, and she's going to give me hell, okay? You get that. I'm going to tell you right now. She's going to be mad about that. Anyway, thanks, Harry. Thank you very much. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we talked about Kurtz, and Harry is a customer of Kurtz Auto, and Kurtz is up at I-17 in Bell. Between Kurt and Eric, they are really, really good at domestic, import, gas, diesels, motorhomes. They'll even do weed eaters, and they hate it when I say that. But, you know, you got a good customer that brings in a weed eater they can't start, it's not going to be too hard to get it running.
Right.
You know? And you just find the junior guy and say, pull it until the rope breaks or you get it running. It's just, and just like you, I'm going to spray a little carburetor cleaner in the air cleaner, and I'm going to get it to start. And then once I get it to start, then I'll just rev the heck out of it, which nobody ever does.
Right.
And when you have those two-stroke weed eaters, the best thing you can do before you shut them off is just boom, grab a hold of that throttle and wind that thing up and count to 100 and then shut it off.
Yeah.
That's the best thing you can do for those. But anyway, Kurtz is a great place, and he has ASE-certified technicians, I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner. Any other things new? The oil situation getting you down with all the different possibilities of oil and weights and uses and oil change intervals?
No, not really. Okay. I keep it simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
The problem I'm seeing right now is our industry, and I say our industry, and I'm saying from the extreme bad to the extreme good, our industry is really struggling with oil change intervals and intervals for everything.
Right.
Everything. We interviewed a technician the other day that worked for a specific kind of auto repair shop that's associated with others. And one of the questions they asked him was, you know, why are you looking for another job? And he says, we're really being pushed hard to sell. And he says, and people are so much more aware of their owner's manual. Now, I think you'll agree with me that the overwhelming majority of the cars are going to call for major service between 75 and 100,000 miles.
Yes.
Fluids, belts, hoses, spark plugs, brakes, calipers, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And actually, calipers was a pretty poor example because caliper is a symptom-driven problem. They're fine until they're bad.
Right.
And then the abnormal wear is going to be the reason. So we don't replace calipers for fun. But I see that is an issue, but I also see by looking at manuals that there's a wide variety. There's a lot of people out there that are calling for a 40,000-mile service, and there's a whole lot of cars that are at 100,000-mile tranny service, a transmission fluid change and filter.
Right.
How do you explain that to your customer?
The 400,000-mile?
Yeah, the 100,000 versus the 40. I mean, this car, Mr. Jones, your wife's car is calling for a transmission service at 40. Your truck is at 100. How do you do that?
What's vehicle usage? How do they drive it?
Yeah.
Is it short trips? You know, what's the fluid look like?
Yeah, and her car is a two-door or a four-door SUV sport utility vehicle, and it doesn't pull a trailer. It can't pull a trailer.
Right.
You're pulling a trailer. You got a boat. You go hunting. You're off-road. There's a little bit of a difference there.
Yes.
From the environment, but it's tough. It's tough.
It is tough.
And I think you'll agree that most of us have decided to, on fluids, go by the color, the smell, and just the overall vehicle.
Right.
So there's times that even though it says in the owner's manual that the transmission service is at 100, it's pretty easy to pull the stick and put it on a white piece of paper and show them the brown fluid and say it's time.
Yeah.
And even though it's at 70,000 miles, it's time.
Yep.
And so those kinds of things that can happen. Who might that be, Gil?
Hey, good morning to Don.
Don, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. This is Don. Doing good.
Go ahead.
2007, failed at Tacoma, 2.7. This year, starting making a noise the way I can describe is like a distributor. And it didn't matter if it was hot or cold. So at one point, I pulled it, find out there was oil on it. So I took it to the shop. They changed the cover gasket a couple of times after market. So I bought one from dealer. They changed it again, and it still does the same thing.
Okay. We're kind of confused about this. You said that you thought it was the distributor. What symptom did you have that you said the distributor?
What I'm trying to say, the noise that the motor was making, it sounded like an old distributor.
Okay,
that was like the noise.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I'd use that. I've been in this repair business 50 years, and I've never heard that before. And I don't know what an old distributor sounds like. Is there a clicking noise with the distributor, you think?
It's like if the distributor on the old car used to adjust it, so it was off, would make that noise. I remember I had a vehicle in the past, but that was the noise that I can describe. Like,
okay, hold on. Stop. What you're describing is the ignition is pinging, or the engine is pinging because the timing is too far advanced. So when you throttle up, there's a knocking noise, sounds like a typewriter. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's okay. So what you've got is a rattle on acceleration. That's the correct terminology for that. Is that I've got an engine rattle on acceleration. Yeah. And then somebody said that they were going to replace the valve covers, and that would take care of it?
Yes.
I've never fixed a rattle on... when it has pre-ignition, you have cheap gas, you have too much timing, you have too much carbon. Help me out. You're running lean?
Yeah, running lean.
Running lean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a wide variety of things that cause the engine to rattle or ping, but valve covers are not one of them.
The reason they say they wanted to change it because the spark plug had oil and they thought the gasket was leaking.
Okay.
If the plugs are oil soaked, that needs to be addressed for sure, but I still don't think that's going to fix the ping.
Well, and not only that is if the valve cover's leaking, it's leaking externally.
Well, they leak into a cylinder, though, where the spark plug is. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But that would be something that you would be able to see because not all of them would be oily.
You wouldn't think so.
And so you'd look at one and you'd say, okay, well, it's a four-cylinder, or let's call it a V6. So we got three on one side, three on the other. We got a valve cover that sits over the top. So number three on the passenger side, the middle one is oil-soaked. That's the valve cover we're going to do. We're not going to do both of them. We're just going to do one of them.
Right.
So I don't know. Even if the oil, let's talk about this. Even if the oil was leaking at the valve cover around the oil around the spark plug, how is that going to have pre-ignition?
I don't get that either.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because the correct terminology is pre-ignition. Your car is pinging. It's pinging. It's like it's got cheap gas in it. So I don't understand why they took. But then again, I wasn't there when they diagnosed it, and I wasn't there. But I don't think in all my years of 40, 50 years of working on cars, I don't think I've ever replaced the valve cover gaskets on it or messed with the spark plug with respect to a ping.
No.
Yeah, and that's a tough jump to make. Can I ask you, what kind of car is it?
It's a 2007 Toyota Tacoma.
Tacoma. And what part of town do you live in?
Yeah. North Side Bell Road.
Okay. I would talk to Action Auto or Kurtz Automotive. Action or Kurtz. Kurtz is spelled with a C. Either one of those guys can help you. You ask to take them to a quick drive and show them that it's knocking, it's pinging, and then say, call me with an estimate on what the repair is and see what they say. Those two guys are pretty good. Action is at I-17 and...
Deer Valley,
thank you. And yep. Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell.
Bell.
So we got to run. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel is my assistant today, and he's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And when he says Strictly Diesel, he kind of means that. But let me ask you a question. If I have a diesel truck and you're my diesel guy, if my wife's car needs an oil change, do I need to ask you, or are you going to say no?
Bring it to us. We'll take care of it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Because somebody asked me that question not too long ago, and I said, I don't really know the answer to that, but knowing Nate, I'm pretty sure he's going to say yes.
No, we'll take care of the family for sure.
Exactly. So, yep. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa on Main Street in Stapley. They've been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma come from two families that started gas stations in the 60s in Mesa. They know right from wrong. And they probably get as many compliments as all the shops do, in the sense that Brian and Thelma, once you meet them, once you shake their hand, and once you talk to them, you'll understand. Just like Nate and his staff, we really have your interest in front of our own. And these shops that I refer you to, I know their families, I know their people, I know where they live, I know I have their cell phone numbers, and so when I say to you, I think you should go talk to them, it's because I'm sending you to the best place geographically that I can find. So Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa. I'm sorry, that's the best I can do. Jeffrey, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey. I had just a quick question. I got an old 96 F-250, and, it's got some beat up wear and tear on it, and I'm just looking for like a body shop, and I see you have all the recommendations for repair shops, but do you have any good recommendations for like some pretty minor body work?
The answer is no, and I'll tell you why. There has been a lot of movement in the body shop industry, and the insurance companies have always held the drum and did the beat. And the shops that I used to recommend just kind of raised the white flag and sold their shops because they were so tired of dealing with insurance companies who they represented as having they asked the shop to financially participate in the repair when the shop has no responsibility to financially participate in the repair. The insurance company should pay for that. This is a thought process that I don't agree with one way or the other. But unfortunately, it's created quite a divide. I would love to send you to a body shop, but I'm going to tell you what I have drilled this all down to. I want you to call your insurance agent and ask him who he uses, and I'll tell you why. Let's pretend that you have Farm Bureau. My guy is going to be handling and being involved when you wreck your car or you need paint and body work and stuff like that. He's going to be involved. When one insurance company uses kind of exclusively two or three shops in the Valley area, those guys dance to their music, and they're really going to be focused on doing good work so they don't lose their biggest client. So I think you should contact your agent and ask him, have you had your car fixed lately? Who's been happy? Because he's going to know the answer. And he's going to say, oh, well, ABC over here on so-and-so, I've had numerous conversations with them, and I know the adjusters like them, and I think you should go there. I think that's what you're looking for. The other thing is talk to the mechanical shop that you use and ask him who he uses.
So that's part of my problem is I don't go to a mechanical shop. My dad's a pretty solid mechanic, and I know some ins and outs, and so between us, we usually get most of the repairs done and okay. Don't really have any relationships with shops.
Okay, well, no,
so
tell
that,
me
that
what,
part's kind of okay. Stuck for me.
No problem. What part of town do you live in?
South Tempe, like right on the edge of Mesa.
You know, we're in South Tempe, and we don't have a shop. We had a kid that worked a shop, and his family owned the shop, and then they had three shops, and they treated us and our customers like kings and queens. They just did awesome work. Then his dad sold all three shops to a conglomerate, and then he went to work for the conglomerate, and then he told us, don't come here. And wow. so the other day when we needed this, then we called our Farm Bureau agent because we have Farm Bureau insurance, and we called him and he guided us to a shop. But it's you're in the same boat we are. Nate, you got any comments?
I got nothing. We're in the same boat too. We don't have anybody currently, so if we have an issue, we're going to have to find it.
And Nate and I both would have used Phoenix Body Works because
yep.
He's between us.
Yep.
But he sold to a conglomerate, and And I think that most of us confidentially would say that that wasn't a move upward. That wasn't a move
right.
for the better.
That's what we're hearing.
And that's yeah. what we're hearing. And yeah. so, and Nate's in Pinnacle Peak and I'm in South Tempe. And we sent to Phoenix Body Works as well because we knew Greg. And
right.
Greg was the guy.
Right.
But when Greg sold, things changed.
Yep.
So I'm sorry. I just can't help you, Jeffrey. Good luck to you, bud. Thank you. All righty. You know, it's, there's a lot of movement in our industry. Right now, Sun Automotive is buying shops all over town. And Big Brand Tire is buying tire stores all over town. And there's millions and millions of dollars being traded out. And there's a lot of guys that have been in business for a very long time that just got cashed out, which is something that we all wish for at somewhere down the line. We hope that our wife's attorney doesn't shut us down. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because that's the way they tell us that we're getting a divorce is they show up and take your business. I'm teasing. The bottom line is it's things have changed a lot.
They have.
And it's very difficult to find. There is so much going on and so much happening, and a shop can go from privately owned, husband and wife, kids may be involved. In your case, employees, how long is your longest tenured employer? Oh, employee?
10, 12 years.
Same with us. Eddie's 30 some odd years.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple in the 20s. The problem is that it just doesn't, it doesn't matter. Because when the conglomerates come in and start buying places up, it's a whole new ball game.
Right.
And one thing you can be sure of is there's going to be an increase in pricing. And that's not a bad thing because a lot of us are a little lax about going up in pricing. We're
right.
happy with where we're at, but we don't really follow the market and we don't do price surveys, blah, blah, blah. And I'm quite sure that someone has said that to you and they've said that to me. Mark, you might be a little shy on the labor rate. You know what? I'm pretty happy at the labor rate.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to go to $200 an hour because we just don't need that to make everybody happy. So those are the kinds of on and off. Anyway, the lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me, and so we can handle gas and diesel questions. And we can talk about if you have a problem with your wife's cooking and stuff like that. We can do it all. Well, welcome back, everybody. And 107.17. I forgot to put a space in there, but that's okay. I'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Anyway, we have two callers, so let's go to Mike real quick. Not real quick, but let's go to Mike. Mike, good morning. How can we help you?
I've got a 2005 Nissan Frontier with 181,000 miles. The inside the cab, it was making a lot of noise. Went to the dealer. It looks like it was one actuator, blunt door actuator, that was making the noise. But I told them since of the model of the vehicle, replace all three of them, and they did. Now I'm getting outside air coming into the cab with nothing on.
That's the fresh.
Is it something I should take back to them?
Yes.
Yes, you should get an explanation. But let me ask you this: when you get outside air in, are your windows up or down?
They're up.
Okay. That is unusual because usually in some of the older cars, and of course your car is 15 years old, 15, 16, 17 years old, the fresh air system would allow ventilation when the windows were open. So we would have air come into the cab and then go out. That's why I ask you if the windows are up or down. But if it's something that you have that you didn't have before, that certainly is.
I did have it before.
But it's still doing it.
Right, and I'm not blaming the dealer. If it's my problem, that's fine.
How can it not be the one of the actuators?
Well, is there a seal on a door that's bad? Is one of the motors not calibrated correctly?
You're right. You're right. There's a lot of ifs there.
Let's go down the line here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
the activators. Let me.
And by the way, it is coming out of the vents.
Okay, well, let me explain. One of the activators is going to, it's just a door that either goes left or goes right. So we're going to have defrost inside the dash is one of the positions. Floor is another position. Vents are another position. And when we go bi-level, then we get floor and vents. So we have all these moving parts about how when you ask for something, it gives you what you ask for. So, but we have three levels of vents. We have defrost at the dash, we have center vent, and we have floor. And then we have a mixture of those three. So if you still had this, if you still have what you had when they went in, and they diagnosed it as one bad blend or one bad actuator, and then you said, go ahead and do two, this is theirs. This is theirs.
Yeah, if they touched it all, it needs to be looked at again. For
yeah.
Sure, so.
And you can do that in a nice way, but just be, just smile and be firm that this is something I had before, and now I still have it. And so I'm concerned because I thought that the work that you did would eliminate my symptom and see what happened.
And yet I still did not ask them to correct that specific problem, so I'm not really blaming them.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, gosh, I wish you were my customer. Man, oh, man, you're way too nice.
By the way, go ahead. On rare occasions when the engine's cold, I start up the engine. For 15 seconds, the engine shakes badly. The check engine light flashes, and then it goes away, and it doesn't come back until it decides to on its own sometime later, a long time later.
Are you adding any fluids at all, any oil, any...
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
Sounds like a misfire, possibly, that could be happening if it's shaking.
It almost has to be that.
That would be the only thing to throw a light or flicker a light like that.
And then the misfire, what I was searching for is some kind of an injector leak, so black smoke, and it runs poorly for the first 5 or 10 seconds, and then
right.
It smooths out by itself.
Right.
So I'm looking for clues about stuff like that.
Sure.
But I can't imagine that we would have any kind of a vacuum problem that would create that problem on startup. I think the climate controls are going to be completely different from this engine issue.
Yes.
So it'd be great if they fixed it while they were there, and perhaps maybe in one sense, they're both run by vacuum. So now we have an engine, we have a vibration and an engine miss, and we've got the vibration. And now we have this blend or issue. It could be a vacuum leak. We could have a significant vacuum leak that is not supplying enough vacuum to everything to make it work.
Could be that too, yep.
And typically a significant vacuum leak would also affect the power brakes. So when you apply the brakes, that may cause the engine to rumble and vibrate as well.
Yep.
So, you know, us old guys know how to diagnose that, and hopefully that's what you're going to get. But certainly you need to go back and be nice, and I think that hopefully they'll accomplish your goal.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Okay, good luck to you. Mike, thank you. And he's exceptionally nice.
Yes.
And forgiving.
Yes.
I mean, he's in the top 10%. Now, my customers are all north of 50, but there's some of them that are between 0 and 50.
Right.
You just changed my windshield wipers, and now my spare tire's flat. Whoa. How do we go in there?
Yeah, exactly. You
know, where's the relationship there?
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Marty, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Got a 2003 Chevy Suburban 5.3 with a dreaded electrical problem. I realize these are tough to find. But I thought maybe you might have heard something like this. Intermittently, I've got a seatbelt or an airbag warning light comes on. I've checked the code on it. It's passenger side. Now, that seems pretty straightforward. But at the same time, my air conditioning, heating air conditioning control will go blank, and the air conditioner will quit working. And then once in a while, it'll set an engine code. Most of the time, I go in and check it, and there's nothing there. One time, it did show a lean misfire. The real odd deal is it intermittently calls OnStar when all this is going on.
Okay. Or
may I help you? I've never used OnStar in my life. It seems like a bad ground or something. Is anything you've ever heard of, something like that, where it could all be tied in together?
I'm telling you, before you said it sounds like it's a bad ground, I'm thinking to myself, we're going to start at basics, and basics is just exactly that, checking all the grounds and checking all the power supplies and all that kind of stuff, because you have things there that are directly related to an interruption of normal power or ground. So the answer is that's exactly where you'd go to do that. I think I'd forget about Google. I'd forget about the Internet. I would just sit down on a couple of symptoms. And I think the possibility exists. There's better than a 50-50 chance that one repair will fix two or three symptoms.
Okay.
Because they seem to be, I think you'll agree, they seem to be all electrical.
They do, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's, I couldn't see how they tied together, but, man, they all have.
OK, Can you use a can you use a digital voltometer? Do you know how to use one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to do this real quick. Pay attention. You're going to stab the positive cable on the battery.
Okay.
You're going to hold it there. And then you're going to take your negative, your black probe, and you're going to touch the fender and the radiator and the air filter and the firewall, and you're going to touch the negative side of the battery, and you're going to touch everything metal on the engine, and you're going to look for the same voltage every time. So if it's 12.8, then it'll be 12.8 everywhere you go. When you hit a bad ground area, then it's going to drop to 8, or it may drop to 0.
Okay.
So you can do that yourself. That will help eliminate it. The other day we had a vehicle that had a door. I had a window motor that was intermittent, and it had the signs of that. So as we were checking our grounds, we found out that the door hinges had worn bad. Somebody had just pumped them full of grease, which created resistance. And so we cleaned up the grease, but then we just took two sheet metal screws, and we put one on the door and one in the door frame, and we put a short piece of number 10 wire in between them, and that fixed the problem. So, that was also $125 because my wife was involved, and she had to tell me how to fix it. So that's the reason why it was more money.
There you go. Okay. All right. Well, apparently on the right track, but appreciate your information there. I'll get the voltmeter and see if I can buy stuff there.
Yep. See if you can do that. Thank you very much, Marty. Did I take my 40 break?
You did not.
Not yet.
Oh, not yet? Oh, my goodness. If I don't know. I'm going to have a clock that talks to me. You know what I mean?
I was pointing to the screen.
I know you were. Yeah. I know you were. Okay. Hey, Gil, it's all yours, buddy. 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel is flying wing for me today and with me today. But Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa has been a good shop, and he's always done a good job. But on the other side of town, we have Larry Harker's Auto Repair. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And when you walk in the shop, Ellen is on the front counter, and she's the wife of the husband. Obviously, her and Larry, and not Larry, Bob are married. But just make sure that you treat her with respect because she runs the shop. She's a really nice lady, and if you talk techie with her, she'll probably out-talk you. She's been around a long, long time. In the shop is Bob, and then they have a nephew that works there as well. And between Bob and the nephew, they can fix anything. And we've sent lots of stuff, because they're on the other side of the world from us. We've sent a lot of stuff to them, and they've just hit a home run each time. Every time we've sent someone to them, we get a call back or an email back or something like that saying what a nice experience that was. But the key is that a lot of times some men, think that when they walk in and they're faced with a female service writer, that it's time to school the service writer. And this is not the time.
No, definitely not.
This is not the time. Okay, let's go to the phones, and let's see. And I wrote it down. Bobby, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Yeah, I was calling about this 14 Mustang GT that I have with an automatic transmission. I think it's the 6R80, if that means anything to you.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, 6-speed automatic. Anyway, the thing shifts beautifully, but I just have this little thing about it. Put it in park. I put my foot on the brake. I put it in park, and I let my foot off the brake just before I shut it off. It always just lurches forward like an inch or two. Is that normal?
Well, let me ask you something. Is the ground you parked on completely level?
Yeah. And it does it every time.
Okay.
It's almost every time. It'll just lurch forward just a couple of inches.
Okay. We get that. I need you to back in the driveway a couple of times or back into the garage and see if it still does it. Because they're going to do this, and they're going to charge you shop rate money. So you might as well just do it yourself. Park it in different environments. Park it with the nose up. Park it with the butt up. Park it with the left side up and the right side up. Park it and see if it happens all the time. But when you pull up, you're at a stop, and you put it in park, and there's a little bit of a rev, and it lurches forward, you say?
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Could the idle be up too high?
I'm thinking more transmission in the parking, Paul. It's looking for the engagement.
Yes.
So it's moving a little bit. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
The parking Paul is this device that's got a toothed gear on it, and depending on where you're at, it's going to just lock the tooth. But if it stands on top of the tooth, there is going to be a little bit of a lurch. And a lot of people, they'll put it in park and they're sloped, the nose is high, and then when they let go of the brake, the car will go backwards and then lock.
Right.
That's called the parking pawl, and I think that is the suspect. Now, how many miles are on it?
65,000.
Okay, so you're not yet due for a transmission service, but I'd probably do my transmission service at 80, and I would say to them, I want you to take a picture of when you pull the pan after you've emptied out the fluid, and I'd like to look at see what's inside the pan, because part of our job is to look inside the pan at clutch material, small amounts of metal. Maybe you don't want an O-ring, you don't want a C-clip.
Actually did change it, 40,000, and the thing was spotless in there, you know, other than just a little of that dust.
Okay.
It's on the magnet.
All right, try one other thing. You pull up, and you put it in park, and your foot's on the brake, and I want you to apply the parking brake at that point before you release the regular brake and see if that changes it for the better. Because what you're talking about is slopping the drive line, and that's the reason why I thought if we back you in and we're going to, you know, put the load on the front side instead of the back side. But to be honest with you, my truck at 150,000 miles has a little bit of slop in the parking pawl right now, and I'm not worried about it.
Right.
So it'll move an inch or more.
We eliminate it, the cause being too much transmission fluid or too little?
Absolutely. That's not the symptom for too much or too little. That's not the symptom. There is no way in God's green earth that too much fluid or too little fluid is going to cause what you're talking about.
All right. Well, that's comforting.
Yeah. No. Do you agree?
I agree. Yeah, because too little fluid, you're going to have another symptom with it. It's slipping. It's going to neutral around turns. Too much fluid, it's aerating. It's not cooling. Something else is going on.
It's foaming. It's throwing. The vent is spewing transmission fluid on the ground and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's not going to be a fluid too high or too low. It's not going to be that at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you very much. It is what's really good. What I like is in men and women alike, there's three answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. Men don't know that I don't know, but the women do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you ask questions like I said, well, you know, can you, I get you to back into your driveway and do it? Because I want to see if it does it there.
Right.
And that means something to us.
Yes.
And then he gave us the miles. He said it I don't remember what he said on the miles. It was a 14, and he has a
60,000.
I thought that was nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, 60,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nothing. So it's going through my head, and I'm going, well, if he said 150, I'm thinking, okay, we're a little bit loosey-goosey in the transmission, but not at 60.
Right.
But 60 is almost well, it's 2.5 times around the girth of the earth. We can't lose sight of that.
Right.
People say, well, I only have 100,000 miles. Well, that's 4 times around the equator. That car has driven the equator 4 times. Do you ever think of that?
I haven't thought of it that way.
It's 25,000 miles around the equator.
Really?
Around the girth of the earth is 25,000 miles. People lose sight of it. Well, I only have 100,000 miles on it. Let me put 100,000 miles in perspective.
Yeah, that's a lot of terrain.
That's a lot of terrain. Yeah. That's a lot of shifting. That's a lot of startups. That's a lot of fuel pump activations. That's a lot of spark plugs. That's a lot of everything. So we've just lost sight of what 25,000 miles represents. But somebody's going to call in and say, Mark, it's 24,886. And I already know that, but I can remember 25,000.
Yeah.
But at 25,000 miles, if you drove the equator, you'd have to stop for fuel, unless, of course, you had a Chevrolet or a Dodge, and then you wouldn't have to stop for fuel. But at 25,000 miles, there's really nothing going on.
Right.
So it's just, somebody put that into perspective years ago, and I thought it was one of the neatest comparisons, because it really does drive home. Well, I only have 25,000 miles on it. Well, let me tell you what that means.
Exactly.
And I think it's somebody will correct me, but I think it's 188,000 miles to the moon.
It's been a while. I'd have to look that up.
Okay, hold on a minute. I'm just, you know what I'm going to do?
You're going
to
Google?
No, I'm going to talk to Siri.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Hey, Siri. How many miles to the moon?
Here's what I found from our PO and TW.
It's 238,000. I missed it. Shut up, Siri. 238,000 miles. 10 times around the girth of the Earth.
Right.
Close enough.
Right.
Okay. So at 10 times around the girth of the Earth, you're in the 200,000 or 300,000. When you're in the 200,000 mile range, you've gone to the moon. You've driven to the moon.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost. Yep.
Anyway, it's the little things that keeps my empty head occupied.
Fun facts.
Yeah. And think of the differences that we've made. We got spark plugs that go 100,000 miles with no problem. And in the days that you and I first started, 20, 25,000 was max.
That was it.
Yeah. That was it. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, do you remember when they came out with feedback carburetors in 1981 on the General Motors side and how we all just pooped our pants because we had no idea what that feedback was going to be?
Right.
Remember that?
Yep.
Do you remember when they came back with an electronic ignition, Ford and Chevrolet, in the 73, 74, 75 years? And now all of a sudden we don't have any points in condenser, and we have this box over here with a yellow grommet or a blue grommet or an orange grommet. And now would they want us to buy a piece of equipment that costs $200, believe it or not, to test that ignition module.
Right.
And so, and then you go into spark plugs today, 100,000 miles is a piece of cake on most spark plugs. And really makes no difference on the brand. Would you agree?
I agree. Yeah.
That,
yeah.
For all intents and purposes, they'll all do 100,000 miles.
Exactly. Yeah.
So then we got oil, and we always changed our oil at 30,000 miles, or 3,000 miles, 3,000 miles, 3,000 miles. Now we got oil that goes 10, 15, and 20,000 miles with no problem. And it has a lot to do with the engine, too, because the fuel controls on the engine are not going to let the oil turn to gas. We're not going to spray so much fuel in the engine that we're going to overcome the rings and contaminate the oil. You remember as kids, we had big Holley carburetors with main jets the size of a coffee can.
Yes.
And so when you stomped on it, there was a lot of black smoke and a lot of blue smoke if you had your everything together.
Right.
And the front of the car lifted up a little bit, do you know what I mean? And as you ripped down the street or whatever, wherever you were being stupid, that was a big deal. Today we have four cylinders that will outrun the cars that we built when we were in high school.
Pretty
and
amazing.
If you put a turbocharger on them, it'll outrun all the cars that we had when we were in high school.
Yeah.
So it was just a big difference. But working on cars is kind of easy because the computer gives us some kind of direction. But people think that just because it has an O2 sensor code that it's an O2 sensor problem. So I'm going to ask you this question. What percentage of O2 sensor code do you actually replace the O2 sensor?
Depends on mileage, I think, a little bit, but I say that's 2 to 5%. It's pretty low.
So it's under 1 out of 10.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Fair enough.
Oh yeah.
I agree with you 100%.
Yep.
The rest of the things that cause the O2 sensor code are beyond people's comprehension. A vacuum leak, a bad fuel pressure regulator, I mean, whatever can make it run rich or make it run lean,
exactly,
it can cause that code.
Right.
But the tattletale, the little guy out there yapping, is the oxygen sensor. And he's going, rich, too much fuel, trim it down, Mark, rich, or lean.
Right.
But in reality, everybody changes the O2 sensor.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Well, and so real quick, how do you test an O2 sensor to see if it can see lean?
I haven't done that in forever. Let's refresh.
Pull a vacuum line on it.
Oh,
A vacuum line on it and pull the booster line on it. Pull the vacuum line on it, and it'll go full lean.
Yep.
And then how do you make it go rich? How about a gloved hand over the air intake? Let's shut off some of the air.
Right.
Or take a can of carb spray and go inside the air filter.
Yeah.
So if we can make the O2 sensor see rich and see lean, and it tells us it sees rich and sees lean, it ain't bad.
Right.
It isn't bad.
Exactly.
But you got to have that $4,000 piece of equipment in your hand to talk to the O2 sensor. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Thank you for spending your day with me.